Okay, I'd like to welcome you again then this morning, and thanks for coming. The first panel of the day is about the current projects of Free Software Foundation Europe. So the first presentation, very short presentation, is going to be by Carlo Piana. We'll each talk for a few minutes about the projects that we're mainly working on, and then at the end, if you have questions, we'll do our best to answer them.
Okay. Hello, good morning. My task is to speak about my activity in the Microsoft case, which is 2 years to be condensed in 5 minutes, so it's quite a difficult task for me. But I have prepared some few tens of slides, so if you take half an hour, I will be clear enough. The main points I will be covering are the situation we found when we joined the case, the activities we have conducted, the goals we are pursuing, and the achievements we have, and some acknowledgments to the people who helped with this very complicated activity. So the situation is clear. You may remember that Microsoft was found guilty of antitrust abuse by the so-called Monti decision from the main of my co-national, Mr. Commissioner Monti. This decision imposed the largest fine ever for abuse of dominant position, which is an antitrust abuse of Microsoft, and imposed also some remedies. One remedy was ease the release of Windows XP, a version of Windows XP without Windows Media Player, and another is Microsoft is supposed to provide timely and complete interoperability information for workgroup server operating system under reasonable and non-discriminatory clauses, and a monitoring trustee, an expert, was to be appointed to survey the compliance by Microsoft. Not surprisingly, Microsoft wasn't happy with this decision and appealed. And along with the appeal, they applied for suspension of the measures. And when we heard that Microsoft was unsurprisingly appealing against the decision, because we were, of course, in favor of the same, we applied for so-called leave to intervene, which is a permission to be part of the process. And that was granted, despite Microsoft tried not to have us in the trial, and we participated both in the main case, the general appeal, and in the interim case, which is the case for suspension. And we provided oral and written testimony, thanks to in the interim phase, thanks to Jeremy Ellison and Volker Landeck of the Samba team, which is also with us in the trial. And thanks to the legal team of the Free Software Foundation Europe that provided a great deal of contribution and support. And luckily, the suspension has been denied, so the decision was to be implemented. And we have been active also in the implementation phase, which is the activity that the Commission negotiated with Microsoft what Microsoft was supposed to do, actually. So we participated in many meetings with the Commission, the monitoring trustee, an expert appointed by the Commission after receiving a list of possible experts by Microsoft. We filed letter 18, which is a formal statement of the party of what is our position in regard to the compliance. And we also provided the Commission with more non-papers, which is informal suggesting on what to do with the proposals of Microsoft. Of course, and still unsurprisingly, the proposal of Microsoft were entirely unsatisfactory to our objectives. This is not enough. After one full year of negotiations back and forth between Microsoft and the Commission, still the position of Microsoft wasn't satisfactory, not to us, but neither to the Commission. So the Commission issued a statement of objection that said you are not compliant, and they threatened, the commission threatened the 2 million fine per day until Microsoft decided to comply fully. So we participated also in an administrative hearing before an independent officer, a very large crowd, and quite scary crowd, and myself and Volker Lendegger, who I mentioned before, took the stand and provided further testimony. And then the big show, the main hearing of the main case, the general appeal, that was the longest hearing ever before the court of first instance. It took 1 week with a lot of lawyers taking the stand, with a lot of testimony, a lot of people attending, a lot of journalists, with the largest panel of judges that ever had a hearing. This is a case which broke many records, and this panel was made of 13 judges, it's called Grand Chamber, or La Grande Chambre. And at that hearing, we provided much testimony. We issued a statement of objection. Statement in intervention. This is incorrect. Technical answers, comments on other interveners that requested to take part to the hearing, to the case, and were kicked out, thanks also to our criticism. And this took my office space at a great length. I calculate more than 4 meters of file. And at the big showdown in the hearing, we provide the court with a very good testimony by Andrew Trigel, so-called Trige, of the Samba team, who was dramatically effective. We prepared his testimony at very length, and Georg was there to confirm how we were cooperating with the other parties, and we were also well received by, and our contribution was very valuable for the other interveners. And the testimony, to my experience and knowledge, was very convincing, and all the press was utterly surprised and impressed by it. And I say here, it was lethal. If I were a Microsoft lawyer, I would not dream for 2 solid days after Mr. Trigel's testimony. But what were our goals for this litigation? Of course, our goal was not Microsoft bashing. No? Our main goal was that the decision were to be upheld, so that Microsoft started behaving like a good citizen. That's always our goal. Of course, if this goes to the benefit of the free software, that's better. And in this line, we want to establish a precedent that a company cannot abuse its market power in the software market, and especially not against free software again. Of course, we have also some personal goal, that is to establish and to raise our profile with other players, industry, the commission, politicians, governments, so that we are considered good allies, good and reliable allies for our friends, and pay in the for fools. And of course, to raise our visibility, because we are a public entity, and we need to be exposed to work in some sense. And if I see the achievements, I see that they are quite consistent to our goal. We won the interim measure, so the decision was not suspended. I think we are in very good shape for the main case. So I trust that the main case will be finally upheld, at least we have done as much as possible and to do that. The Commission is now taking our position in consideration, which was not necessarily the case before. Now they say free software must have a chance to use this information, maybe not everything, but something of this. Microsoft is entirely disagreeing with that. It doesn't accept, so that it has already filed another appeal against just the word of the Commission, that when they said, we might consider to force you to release this information to free software compliant condition. They filed a separate appeal, and we have applied for intervention also in this further appeal, so it's going to be massive, more than it's already. But most of all, we have established ourselves as a serious, reliable, and of course independent, not usable player. So we have established our stance in the case, and people must take care of us, must confront at least with us. And final, last but not least, we had achieved quite a great media exposure. So journalists, in the first place, journalists didn't care about us, didn't mention us, didn't even know that we were active in this litigation. As it turned out, we were considered by the press as the one of the main players, as we deserve it, in, to my opinion. But of course, I don't want to claim this entirely for me, or I want to claim just a very small fraction of this to my person, and I want to acknowledge as much as possible to all people that have contributed. I just coordinated and provided just a glue to glue together all this contribution. I would have never done anything without a very good contribution by all people that were active. First and foremost, the legal team of the Free Software Foundation that provided invaluable contribution. The Samba team, which is provided these incredible people, Jeremy Ellison, Falk Landeke, and Andrew Trigio. Georg Greve, who was with us at the interim measure and at the main hearing, Stefano Muffulli, was also very active in reviewing and providing suggestions and stuff. JJ, our PR guy, who was very active also during the hearing. He arranged for interviews, press releases and stuff. Antonella Beccaria from the Italian team, who, by the way, is publishing a short presentation on the activity in this case and in GNU Vox. Maybe Stefano later will give more details about it. The many I'm forgetting. I prepared these slides this morning and was quite dizzy, so I must have forgotten somebody. Of course, the main acknowledgement goes to Richard, because it's Richard. And I want to acknowledge in anticipation the many of you who will contribute and will try to help us. There is much more to do in many ways. And I'm ready to take questions.
Bueno, antes de nada, hola a todos, buenos días. Voy a dar esta pequeña charla en inglés, aunque yo no sé si sois la mayoría castellano parlantes, pero bueno, para continuar con la línea lo voy a decir en inglés. Luego en las preguntas pues podemos jugar. Bueno, I'm saying that I'm going to give this brief talk in English, and later on we will make the questions We will make the questions. Yeah, somebody's telling me that cannot be heard. Now? Okay. Thank you. So I'm going to talk about a little bit about the Spanish team build-up of FSFE, FSF Europe, how we are doing it, and what we found on the way. In that respect, I have to say that the Spanish situation is a particular one, because we have, in my perception, we have a lot of free software users really seeking for a community group that to represent them somehow in in what the FSFE is. I mean, trying to secure free software politically, socially, and legally, among others. But there is, at the moment, a perception in the Spanish community of users that there is not such a group. So it's a big, very big opportunity for FSFE to establish in Spain, and to organize these actions that are not being taken seriously, at least at the moment or up to now, in Spain by any group. We have also the GNU-ES hacker community, high-profile computer geeks group. We have many people knowing that the FSFE exists, but not knowing really what its role is. Then we have many government agencies very involved in free software, many of them not really knowing a lot of aspects about the subject, even though they are making big efforts. It's in general terms, but it's not absolutely. There are many people doing good things and knowing. But you know, when you go to talk to them, many times you find that they have a mess on their heads. You know, they don't understand really many aspects of the subject that are very, very important. So they don't have finally reliable partner or party to talk to and who to ask. So this is what we want to become the FSFE Spanish team that we with affection call FSFE Square, because it's got two E's. That's what we want to do. In order to get to that point, we took a two-phase approach. First of all, we made a call for participation in the media. We did it just once, just one call for participation with one PR, just that. And we got near 200 people interested in joining the list that we prepared for the task. But we had all these people that I said before, all of them trying to do what they think that they should do, but without a lot of order or a lot of clear ideas of what to do. What we used that phase for is to seek or to fetch the people who could, on the second phase, organize all this energy that was a lot of energy, but that was dissipating terribly. So we had that phase. Everybody was trying to work there to do their own project, you know, not understanding very well what the FSFE main aims or main goals are. Even though we explained it throughout, Georg came to Spain to a conference, to a small meeting, and we were explaining it over and over on the list. And so finally, many energy was being dissipated, but we finally found a few people, enough people to go to phase two, which is the phase that we are going to do to go through now, which will be to organize the team in sub-teams around a set of documents, to say it so, or frequently asked questions about what we are going to do, what we should do, the approach we should take, and we hope that from there on we will be able to build and to, you know, be able to get to the goals, the FSFE goals here in Spain. Anyway, we know that the situation in Spain still has the problem of people wanting a very big, to say so, Linux user group or a free software user group. And that is confusing the people coming to us all the time. So one of the things that we thought that we could do is to make a subgroup of on the real FSFE Spain group to tell people what FSFE is and do that in a continuous basis. So as you can see, and this is almost everything I have to say about this, the Spanish team is having a very slow but firm build-up, and we invite you to join us or to discover what we're doing and what we want to do. First of all, in fsfeurope.org website, where all FSFE approach to free software and activities and goals are. And also, if you want to join specifically us here in Spain, you can go to fsfe.libre.org. Where you will find the direct access to the mailing lists and everything. We hope that you join us as much as possible. And also, regarding that thing that I was saying about the free software user group and the lack of one big, powerful and representative in terms of talking to the government and talking to the agencies and, as I said before, secure free software politically, socially and legally. The fellowship of the Free Software Foundation Europe can well serve that purpose, and we are making also promotion of that in the FSFE Spain group. And that's all for now. Thank you.
Okay, hi. My name is Kieran O'Riordan. I've mostly been working on GPL v3 this year. It seems important and it needs more help. But the main work I do for FSF Europe is about legislation. So I'm originally a computer programmer from Ireland, and I started working on software patents in 2003. I moved to Brussels in 2004, and I started working full-time for FSFE in 2005. And people ask me quite often, what do I do each day, or, you know, when I go into the office, what is it exactly that I do as a lobbyist? And it's very hard to describe. There's not many average days. When I was lobbying full-time on the software patents issue, a lot of the work we'd do was to go into the European Parliament and talk to the other lobbyists and the other companies. The members of the European Parliament were very interested in talking to company representatives, but one problem that the company representatives had was that when they come to the Parliament, you know, they're not experts on legislation, they're not experts on software patents, and, you know, they have a hard time having a dialogue with the politicians. So sometimes we'd go into the Parliament and, you know, we'd coach the companies and, you know, explain to them what are the controversial issues, you know, what will they be asked, and we helped them to do their lobbying work. So we did a lot of work, you know, indirectly through this method. Another thing that we had to do in the European Parliament was that we had to network the MEPs, because the MEPs, they never like to act alone. They don't like to do something without the support of their party. So when we found a party that is in favor of software patents, we would have to look for the individual MEPs in that party who, you know, are questioning that party line or who are themselves against software patents. So when we found these people, we would network them and put them together and, you know, get them to talk to each other, and once they realized that they, you know, they weren't the only person with this opinion, then they could start talking to the other MEPs. So this is how we, you know, we looked for pockets of support in the European Parliament and eventually built, you know, turned those into majorities. One of the funny things we noticed was that we had to spend the most time talking to the sort of politicians that, you know, we didn't like so much. We found that it's easy, the politicians that you like are often on your side, or they're quite easy to bring them over. So this is one thing we didn't anticipate. But I'm not going to go into too much detail about software patents. Pablo is going to talk about software patents just before the lunch break. The one thing I noticed about software patents is that I realized that they were just one part of a bigger picture. There's never going to be legislation saying software shouldn't be free or users should not have freedoms. Nobody is going to directly be against free software. So software patents were an indirect way of preventing, of harming free software. Software patents are, it's a burden that can't be borne by the free software distribution methods sometimes, or the free software development models. These are things that are associated with free software, but they're not directly about free software. So the software patents issue, it's going to come back, and it's not going to come back in the same way, because there's already been a directive to change the legislation. And the MEPs, the members of the Parliament, they understand the issue now, and they're quite on our side. During the two big votes, we got majorities of 75% and 67%. So it's not going to come back in the same that way. It might come back through, there are two things at the moment. There's one thing called the Community Patent and one thing called the European Patent Litigation Agreement. And instead of changing the legislation, these change the courts, or where the patents go to for a final ruling. So this is another angle that we have to be watching for, and we still have to keep the MEPs aware of this. But it's not really getting as much press, because the software patents issue was something that journalists knew about. But once that died, a lot of the journalists, they decided, okay, that topic's over. So it's not getting as much mention in the press. So there's a new problem now. There's a directive called the Intellectual Property Rights Enforcement Directive. And it's actually the second directive of this type. And what it does is it criminalizes commercial scale intentional infringements of intellectual property. So the term intellectual property covers 11 or so different rights, which often have very little to do with each other or nothing to do with each other. And this happens to include patents and copyrights and trademarks. So this directive doesn't, of course, say anything about free software. But what it does is, by criminalizing activities in this area, it raises the threat level of making a mistake in this area. So, for example, the software patents are not enforceable at the moment. They're being handed out by the patent office, but they're not being enforced by the courts. So people can be pretty confident that they're safe from software patents, but is pretty confident enough if this is a criminal measure? With criminal measure, you can't settle out of court, you can't get insurance against it, and the punishments are pretty harsh. They can include jail time or the closure of your business and things like this, very large fines. So these are things that very companies with a lot of resources can take this burden. They can take these risks because they have a huge legal team and they have the money to go to court for these issues. But not all developers can do this. So it excludes a lot of developers who are working either as hobbyists or in smaller companies, or companies who are not directly making money from software and who just happen to contribute to some free software packages. So this, again, it's indirect discrimination, and that's another thing that we have to work on, which isn't getting as much mention in the press. So I mentioned that I used to be a programmer, and I think that the reason I moved into the legislation arena is because our software is really, really good. And it's spreading really quickly. People are using Firefox, and people are using GNU Linux, and people are using OpenOffice. And software development is something that we're doing really successfully. And the proprietary software people, or people who don't like free software, the way that they realized they can counter us is not by trying to compete with us for technology, because for technology, we've caught up in many places, we've passed them out in some places, we're going to catch up in all other places. But one of our weak points is legislation. This is something we're not used to. This is something that, when we want to write software, we just write software. But we have to realize that there's a huge legal environment that we also have to make sure doesn't get changed to harm us. So the work we do now in legislation, it's about directives, and then sometimes we respond to surveys from the Commission, or we participate in panel hearings. And all the time when we're doing this, we have to make sure that we build a movement. It's not enough to, you know, build an anti-software patent project somewhere and, you know, just focus on software patents. You know, because these are just part of one bigger picture, the next challenge won't be software patents, it will be, you know, intellectual property rights enforcement, or it could be a change in copyright law. So we have to build a movement so that every time a new change appears, we don't have to start from scratch each time. That, you know, we have teams and we have knowledge and we have relationships with politicians and with the media. So one of the ideas that got me thinking about this was something that I heard. It's that you can leave politics alone, but politics won't leave you alone. And the work that I do, I'm able to do it for Free Software Foundation Europe because I'm supported by the fellowship. And so I'd like to pass the mic to Stefano to talk about that.
Realized that we're spending so much time in front of a computer without being able to do much with it. I mean, not being free to modify and to shape the same way we do architects shape the space or the full or empty spaces. And so I turned my focus, my concentration on free software because I started to believe that it was the right way to do software. And I joined Free Software Foundation Europe because defending freedom in early 2000 started to become something that I felt was extremely important. Because I started noticing things also in the real space, in the physical space, where laws were starting in Italy to be incorporated into the architecture. And I mean speed bumps, for example. So I was noticing that speed bumps on the roads, they do slow down the cars in some places, but they also slow down indiscriminately. So if an ambulance must pass through that road and reach faster place, the speed bump doesn't disappear because there is an emergency. It just stops the ambulance too, or slows down the ambulance too. And this non-discrimination, this undiscriminative and incorporation of law into architecture was already something that I saw in the digital arena. In software, I used to use software to run simulation about spaces and interaction of humans and society within spaces. And the software would dictate me what to do, when and how, and what not was possible to import files, for example, coming from other programs. And I saw that as a problem, and I realized immediately that what Richard has been saying since 85 actually was something important for all of us. And therefore, I started thinking about this. And so Free Software Foundation Europe actually stands up to defend freedom to shape, participate, and cooperate in a society that respects liberty and privacy. And the fellowship is the reason why the fellowship exists is that it showed, we realized within Free Software Foundation Europe that participation and inclusion is an extremely important part of our movement. It is possible to really be effective and change things be effective at lobbying, at explaining things at politicians or companies or friends when we join forces. And I think that it's pretty clear now that we can influence legislation after the success in the software patent discussion. So the Fellowship of Free Software Foundation Europe is a community for digital freedom. It's made of people that are united by the interest in freedom. It's also a place where fellows, people can meet and cooperate. And it's also a tool that supports directly the activities of Free Software Foundation Europe. It basically was basically born with the idea of putting together people that are interested and loyal to the ideals promoted by Free Software Foundation, and give them the possibility to be active and be ready to support actions, campaigns, information, share information and things. So the fellows identify themselves into the slogan Free Software, Free Society. Are generally, we believe that they're all creative, independent, and strong believers. They're generally hackers, but hackers in many senses. Like, I like to translate hackers in Italian in maestri d'ascia, the master of the axes. Basically, these were the master that they were the only one that were able to carve for one trunk, one tree, the best, the backbone of the ships, of ships in Venice. And I think it's the best translation we can have in Italian of the term. It means basically that when you're a hacker, you're the most capable person, and you can do things that others can't, or you can see things like that vein into the tree and understand that the shape must be slightly different, and you can maneuver all the tools and you master all of that. And I find this absolutely fascinating, and I think of all the fellows like that, people that really got a point, got something like the sparkle thing that others miss or don't care, or just decide not, they see something that they don't like but decide not to do anything about it. Fellows instead, they get active and they want to do more, they want to be influential. So Free Software Foundation Europe decided to build this program because we wanted to have more inclusion and more people identifying directly with Free Software Foundation Europe. So we build a portal with partners. So a fellow has an account to access an online portal and an instant messaging server, so that cooperation between fellows is possible. As a visible sign of affiliation, fellows also have an email alias at fsfe.org. So to clearly show the affiliation. And they also have, they believe in privacy, as we say. So one of the tools that we have made available, it's a small PGP crypto card that I forgot to bring. it's a small crypto card based on the OpenPGP standard. And powered by GNU-PG. This is a very useful tool to encrypt and decrypt email without having your secret keys shared, put on a disk. And it's actually useful also to put SSH keys. So it's quite a nice little thing. It's also visible because you can bring it around and carry on your, around your neck. But fellows do not only receive this from FSF Europe, they also participate and get active. Indeed, the program has been running for 16 months now. And we are starting to see local activities put together by fellows. This is one of the most interesting things. FSF Europe didn't really, I mean, we as a member of the team, we have always given speeches, we have talked about the fellowship, but we never really mandated actions. We were just slightly suggesting something by chatting personally with fellows. And we are seeing that in England, for example, there are some fellows that started to give speeches in the name of the fellowship. So they're going and giving speeches into schools and universities, distributing leaflets and other material, because they want to spread. They are really getting into the spirit of the fellowship, which is a community of people that want to be active, they want to do things. So we're seeing this in England, we're seeing actions in Austrian schools, meetings of fellows that starting to meet, have physical meeting, and starting to promote an action into schools, an action of information into schools in Austria. Also in Berlin, there is a group of active fellows that meet regularly. Also, the fellows themselves are maintaining the portal fsfe.org. So there is a contribution in that sense directly from the fellows. And also the fellows, it's a very important thing. The fellows interact directly with Free Software Foundation Europe. Free Software Foundation Europe is not such a closed, it's an open organization in many respects. And we confront and we accept criticism, contribution, ideas, volunteer work from others. And fellows have this direct connection with FSF Europe. And we believe also that fellows are, well, active fellows can become also member of FSF Europe. And, well, this is basically more or less what we do. We didn't connect, but one of the things that we did as fellows in Italy was to prepare the fellowship cookies, if this works. We call them the Freedom Fighters cookies. And of course, the recipe is available. Just ask, and you get your freedom modified. So these are our contact points, and I'm really happy if you have questions or curiosities. Thanks. Oh, there is one thing that I absolutely forgot to mention. I'm sorry. It's that the contributions that we receive from the fellowship, which goes from 120 euro per year or 60 euro per year, depending on your capacities or anything you can afford, actually. It's actually made possible for Kieran to work full time during the software patent crisis. We launched the fellowship in February 2005, and the first fellows that we had were contributing exactly the amount of money that we needed to sustain the work of Kieran. Well, actually, a lot less. I mean, he was living basically in the parliament because he didn't have time to go back home. So he had a little. He doesn't like to say that probably, but he had a little inflatable bed in the parliament. So just not to waste time going back and forth. So he probably didn't shower in there.
Disgusting.
But he was a hero, with others, of course. I mean, he was not the only one. But the fellowship made this possible, and we thank all the fellows for that.
There were showers there.
Thanks. The parliament is our hotel.
Yeah, when we got to know the MEPs, they let us use their facilities, so. Okay, we just have sort of 5 minutes for questions, but if we want to take a few questions quickly.
Is the FSFE partly financed by the fellowship?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, and that's just one of their revenues, or...?
Yes, it's one of the lines of revenues. The others are contributions from other people that contribute but do not want to be in the fellowship or are companies or groups that donate as groups. The fellowship is made of individuals. And another line of financing is from projects, European funded or other activities, like we're about to launch a seminar about teaching free software in the public administration. That's going to be another line of financing.
Okay, I'd like to thank the panelists, and the next panel will start in about 10 minutes' time. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.